Good morning. You're tuned to the stations of Spokane Public Radio. I'm Jim Tevenin. Welcome to the second hour of music for your Monday morning. It's a very special hour because I have in studio with me Mateusz Wolski, the concertmaster of the Spokane Symphony Orchestra, and a violin teacher as well. And I think what we'll do is get ourselves started, kind of establish a musical kind of bent for this by listening to a little bit of the music of Franz Joseph Haydn. This was part of the performances given by the Spokane Symphony Orchestra recently, and it kind of sets the tone for what we're going to listen to next. So let's go to the Fox Theater for a little bit of Haydn.
Thank you.
Got to let the bass ring for the last second there. That was music of Joseph Haydn, the finale to his Symphony No. 6, played by members of the Spokane Symphony Orchestra just this spring, part of their online collection of programs, which you can access at their website, spokanesymphony.org. And one of those players is across the way from me this morning, Mateusz Wolski. Good morning, Mateusz.
Good morning, Jim.
Welcome back in the flesh and in three dimensions and all that sort of stuff.
I know, isn't that crazy? I mean, we actually can see each other face to face, not over a Zoom call or something. So, mm-hmm. Yeah, this feels wonderful and strange at the same time.
It does indeed. And you had, as we all did, a front row seat to the creeping disaster that just kind of finally overtook us in the spring of last year. What are some of your takeaways from that time, both in terms of things that you couldn't do and were frustrated, and also the things you were able to ultimately accomplish by being clever, among other things?
So I think I should start by saying that when I look at this period of all of our lives, I think that there was tremendous amount of learning and new challenges. I think that, you know, human race is very successful as species because of our ability to adapt. And I think that I've never experienced anything quite like it for all of us, of just trying to adapt to the circumstances where you are sort of, you don't know what's going to happen next. You're stuck at home. You have lots of your routines that you develop over years, and all of a sudden, all of them are gone. So what do you do? I mean, few revelations I had. I had no idea how much of a kind of adrenaline junkie I was by simply performing every weekend. You know, you get that preparation and you get the dopamine hit when you do a performance, and all of a sudden you take it away. So, you know, so I walk antsy around the house, and my wife is like, what's wrong with you? And I'm like, you know, I have all this energy that I normally get to get out, and here we're just, you know, we're not performing, we're sitting at home. And what do you do next? So I think that was one of the big revelations to me. And then, of course, the rest is just trying to figure out, okay, you know, big part of my life is performance, but the other part of my life is trying to share the knowledge that I acquire over years of how to play this little wooden box with the four strings attached to it.
Yeah, before we get into that, which is kind of key to what we're going to be mainly about today, which is these performances by our young musicians, how long were you without performance?
So I think our last performance with the Spokane Symphony was in April or so, thereabout. Or no, actually, March. We went into a lockdown in April. Mm-hmm. And then actually, I was one of the first musicians to do a performance with Archie Chan. Mm-hmm. We did record a little kind of like a mini recital for a gala in December. So first time actually I played the music with a live person was there. Well, and also we did a little project for the KSPS TV station. Mm-hmm. I also, you know, it was just two of us. Mm-hmm. At this point, you felt, you know, you walk into a studio and you count how many people are there. You know, I'm collaborating. We are distanced because we don't want to get each other sick.
And you were masked for
and
that
we are masked.
Yeah.
And, you know, I mean, that's one of the other revelations, so to speak, what I had through this adventure was that, you know, when we play music together with other human beings, you know, how do we get each other cues to stay together? You know, when you play a piece of music with another musician, I mean, it's nice if you stay together. And when you add the distance, and you never, you know, back then we didn't know what distance should we be. It should be 20 feet, 15 feet, 10 feet, you know, whatever. And you have regulations that are changing every day. So you sort of keep it safe. I I don't know. You know, sometimes we say we play together because we have the sixth sense. Is it the sixth sense? Or is it that your peripheral vision sees the little bit of emotion, you know, inflection of a body, and you sort of, when you know somebody, you know when they're going to play as a beat? Or is it that you somehow register their breathing? Because, you know, all the good musicians take a breath before they start, or before they get into some sort of a climax. All those elements, you put the masks on and you space people far apart, and all of a sudden, yes, I mean, you feel like a fish out of water.
Mm-hmm.
And you feel like all your senses have to be dialed in, you know, all your sensitivities, like, you know, 50% higher to be able to actually accomplish anything. The recording that you just played of us recording Haydn, which was kind of the next chapter, which was fascinating for me and very joyous, was, you know, you don't play, you know, you don't really practice because you didn't have the shows to put on. So all of a sudden, okay, we're going to have those recording sessions. We are, you know, when you play a live performance, you feel that sometimes you can commit crimes of passion. And even if something didn't come out quite perfect, the energy in the room, you know, you're trying to play the music for all the right reasons. Now you go into recording sessions and you know that performance is going to be there forever. Played on the radio by some nice people, maybe sometimes. You know, you have this, the kind of idea that you want to be perfect, or as perfect as you possibly can be. So you're very self-conscious. But as soon as you're very self-conscious, it's impossible to just let loose and play comfortably, because you're limiting sort of your performance by trying to micromanage that. And then you add the distance to this when you cannot hear your colleagues. So I know that all the musical projects, I felt that even though we had to contain the recording time when you're in the studio or on the Fox stage with each other, we could do only a maximum of 45 minutes. That 45 minutes felt like a 3-hour performance to me, because the amount of focus that you had to have in order to try to hear what other people are doing, the amount of focus that it takes to don't be self-conscious, just play the music, just forget that there are cameras or their microphones, just get in it. And, you know, and flipping that switch, it's a one thing when you have a hall full of people, you play for the audience, you feel the energy, you walk in, you tune the orchestra or something, and right away you are in the zone. Now you have to pretend that they are there, or maybe they will be there a couple months from now when they're listening to it. A mentally incredible challenge to overcome. And, you know, right now when I'm looking back at my colleague's performance, as well as my own, but you know, you worry about yourself, but you also worry how is everybody else going to do, and the musicians of the in the Spokane area, you know, between Archie and all my colleagues on the stage, it was unbelievable how amazingly great performances people were delivering in spite of all those insane circumstances.
Yeah, it's remarkable. Yeah, absolutely remarkable. And we could go on at some length about that, but let's go back to where we put the bookmark in. You're beginning to talk about your work as teacher during this time period.
Ah, yes. So teaching during Corona, I mean, anybody that has kids, they, you know, you stick them in front of the computer and you do the Zoom classes and stuff. And then all of a sudden, you know, oh, we have those violin lessons. What are we going to do about that? So in the summer I had few students come by in my garden to play under the tree, because we could, you know, be in the fresh air and keep our distance, and that was fine for, you know, a couple of occasions when the weather is nice and it's not too windy, and the neighbors seem not minding that, so that was nice. But as soon as you go into a slightly colder months, I mean, that's not really practical. So, you know, when you teach an instrument, especially something like a violin, there's a big part of teaching is that you try to train somebody's body to a set of motions, you know, and to play instrument well, you need certain sort of alignments. It's almost like, you know, it's almost like if you were doing a physical therapy, or if you went to a chiropractor and they try to tweak you, make your body behave in a certain way. Well, the same thing happens with the violin. Which means, if you try to verbalize, you know, put that elbow up a little higher, and when you drop that finger, you could curve it in a little different. You know, it takes quite a bit of it's quite challenging to verbalize that. It's so much easier to just show mm-hmm. or come over to the student and just, you know, poke them. I have a little baton, you know, that's me. That's as far as I go as far as conducting is concerned. I have a little baton, and when I'm trying to correct some of their posture or positioning, I'm just going to poke them, you know, in a muscle, in a finger or in the elbow or a shoulder, and that's right away fixes the things. Now, you take that element of being together in a room, and usually you're on the Zoom connection, I use mostly FaceTime. That works mm-hmm. best for me. So I'm FaceTime and Skype. The Zoom, not so much. Initially, they didn't have the right sound settings for the music. They eventually introduced that, so that made it easier for a lot of other teachers. Nevertheless, so what is happening? You're trying to teach your students, then you have problems with the internet speed. So the student plays, you know, ba 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 ba, you know, like all of a sudden the it slows down, then speeds up. So now, am I going to yell at the student for not keeping rhythm, or was this the internet that made them do it? You know, so yes, as a nice teacher, I would say, oh, the internet connection must have been crappy. Why don't you do this again? So, you know, so in some ways, some of that technology, you know, was failing us. But on the other hand, quite often I was talking with some colleagues of mine, and we were going through this COVID experience 20 years ago, none of this would be possible. Mm-hmm. So somehow, I mean, it's a blessing in disguise, but the fact that technology was there for us to maintain the connections, being able to keep training those wonderful young hearts and minds, you know, over distance, then, you know, the credit to the parents that nobody knew what's going to happen, but the majority of my students, initially I thought, wow, I mean, probably like 90% of people will say, sorry, you know, mm-hmm. we don't know where the resources are coming from next. We have to take a pause. And to my big surprise, I felt, you know, the parents of the kids, they felt that the musical education and them continuing to practice the violin was very important. And I think big part of it too was that all those kids were all of a sudden also without friends, just having lessons online, and that being able to play music and express themselves in that way, I think it must have been quite cathartic and healing at the same time.
The only thing that's missing, of course, for the students, as it was for you, is the element of, well, two things, really, the element of ensemble. Mm-hmm. And also the element of performance. Mm-hmm. And part of that is to be able to play for other teachers, and you can see where I'm getting at yes. with this one, that institutions such as Music Fest Northwest are a real part of the landscape for those who are learning their instruments. And that's something that was denied in 2020.
Yes, so you know about that. See, one of the things is that it's been brewing in my head for a while, and I consulted with some of wonderful teachers. There's a fantastic teacher in Seattle, Simon James. One of my former students is studying with him, Yvette Kraft, and mm-hmm. she's doing wonderful. And I actually, even before pandemic happened, I reached out to Simon because he is he's sending students all over the world for Paganini and Menuhin competitions and stuff. He's a very successful, thriving studio. So I was like, so I called him up to ask for some sort of inspiration or essentially pick his brain. How do you do things? You know, that turned into a three-hour conversation of, you know, teacher to a teacher. And what about this? What about that? But the takeaway that I had from it is that kids, you know, if they want to perform, you can teach them all you want, but how to play the instrument. But unless they perform a lot, it's hard for them to get good at performing, right? So I was like, okay, I need to do something about giving my students more opportunities to perform. Because I do it every week, you know, so as we started the conversation, I get that dopamine hit. They don't. So I'm like, oh, I'm a horrible teacher. I have to do something about this. So I initially started to do a monthly or every 6 weeks recitals for the kids. Whether they were ready or not, we're playing, you mm-hmm. know, you're just under the gun. And that all of a sudden accelerated, even over the Zoom, their progress. And then, you know, we're all looking towards the Music Fest. And since it's, you know, in the summertime, I didn't know what's going to happen. And also, we didn't know what's going to happen with the pandemic. And then when the email came in that unfortunately, due to circumstances, they cannot have a full-featured music fest at that time, I saw like a number of my kids that are competitive and that are motivated by having a goal. It just seemed like you just completely kneecapped them. They were devastated. And I could see like the next lesson. I mean, they didn't even look at the instrument. So at that point, you were thinking, okay, is there anything I can do? So I called up a few of other teachers and I was like, hey, you've heard about the music fest. You know, how are your kids doing? And everybody has essentially the same reaction. Yeah, this is pretty bad. I mean, they're all sort of demotivated. Then you add the pandemic on top of that. It's just a bad situation all around. And then I said, you know what? I wonder if we just get our heads together, me and a few other teachers that I know. You know, a lot of them are playing in the symphony. You know, Julia Salerno, who is teaching at Eastern, we're good friends. I try to reach far and wide of who I know and who I collaborated, like Tana Bland, who used to play in the symphony and in the Spokane String Quartet, and we're great friends. And we quite often, you know, talk about students and teaching and stuff. And we sort of created this little co-op of teachers and tried to figure out, can we do a substitute event for the music fest within similar time frame, more or less, and similar repertoire, since the kids were already preparing for the music fest. And that, you know, took some organizing, and I'm generally not a very organized person, so this was another learning experience for me. But, you know, if you have to, you figure it out. So we organized, which we essentially called the Spokane Violin Festival, or, you know, that was the working name, and which was essentially recreating sort of a violin division from Music Fest, loosely, which means that we had few competitive classes for the kids that we had. If we had enough kids that would play the same piece, then they could compete. So we had a Bruch Violin Concerto class that we'll hear, Jesse, that was one of the winners today. We had also adjudication. And one of the things that I always feel with the adjudications, which is very challenging, I know it's challenging for Music Fest and other adjudications, is that because of resources, you usually have one judge for those events, which means that even if somebody's really, really great teacher and tries to be very objective, they inherently are very subjective about the things that they find important. You know, and we are all different. Mm-hmm. You know, some person thinks that, okay, at this age, you should have a very refined technique. This kind of your soul or musical soul will come out later once you know how to play this instrument. Some people will say, you know what? What I need to see is that if that kid is real performer already, because that is impossible to teach. I can always teach them how to play control the instrument. But the true musician, that's what is really important. So because of that, I know that in the past, I've had some students that had experiences that, you know, they thought they did well, and a judge would say, no, you didn't really do that well. Or some other ones that I didn't think they were really prepared. All of a sudden, they get a fantastic feedback that they're just, you know, the next best thing. So I organized this whole thing that we would have a panel of judges. We ended up with three because everybody, like initially we were going to have six, but then we had three because somebody had to go out of town, somebody was good sick or something. So which worked out great.
There's a good number for that.
Yes. So we essentially had an adjudication for actually a larger portion of that event. And then we had a few competitive classes where we just essentially were scoring those kids and trying to see who does best. And one of the carrots that I could offer them, and thank you so much because of you, Jim, was that, hey, if you do really, really well, we will play your recording on the radio.
Okay.
You know, so then all of a sudden, yeah, the kids were like, okay, I'm going to practice really hard because if I do well, then I'll play on the radio. So here we are.
And I think we need to get to that right now because we have three very fine performances. And we're going to start with a performance by a young woman who started rather late for string players. String players, we usually think of very small people and very small instruments.
Yes.
And but Elizabeth Stubblefield, who we're going to hear first, started rather late on, didn't she?
Yeah, it's really funny because I've been teaching Elizabeth for a little over a year. And you know, and she never said anything. I mean, she's a very talented, gifted young player. And, you know, and there are a few issues here and there and that we're working through. And just recently came to my attention that she's been playing the instrument rather short. I think it's somewhere in the neighborhood of 5 years. And I'm like, wow. I had no idea. So I was very, very impressed with her. And she played beautifully. She actually was not in one of the competitive classes, but all of us as judges, we thought that she should definitely be featured because it's some great playing. So she's going to play the Mozart first movement of G major violin concerto, right?
And pianist is Yi-Chun Chen, and our violinist is Elizabeth Stubblefield. Thank you. Elizabeth Stubblefield with pianist Yi-Chun Chen and that music of Wolfgang Mozart. With me in studio is Mateusz Wolski. And that was just a wonderful, wonderful playing job on that. She has a real sense for that music. And given the fact that she was such a late starter on violin, mm-hmm. It just makes a more wonderful story.
No, absolutely. You know.
Now we go from that to a very different player. This is a player who started very young and is still very young, Christopher Anderson. Tell us a little bit about him.
So Christopher is a student of Jason Moody, And he came in, and you know, he's this tiny little dude that walks in, you know, dressed sharp, ready for a performance. And you know, and he just played unbelievably good Polish dance, especially when you meet the young players that are so full of music. You know, one thing is command over the instrument. You know, so he started very, very, very early. Like, you know, I think he was less than three. I might be corrected by somebody at some point, but I think he started very, very young. So he also has been playing, you know, by now about 4 or maybe 5 years. But that is impressive in itself. What was absolutely captivating is that, musically speaking, his instincts are just spot on. I'm very curious how he's going to develop as a person, as an artist. You know, I mean, the road to balance those two elements, the technical proficiency that doesn't overshadow kind of what you're trying to express with music. That's always, you know, I compare it sometimes to pruning of a bonsai tree, which I have absolutely no idea what to do. I understand the concept. That essentially, as you try to develop those young musicians, on one hand, you have to constantly yell about the intonation and the rhythm and the sound quality and stuff like that. But on the other hand, they do things that just come out of nowhere, musically speaking. And you can see that when they all of a sudden just let go and just channel the music, without you ever telling them anything, they can do marvelous things, and you get chills, and you know, even from the tiny little performers. So I was very, very impressed with Christopher when he performed. So yeah, let's hear what he sounds like on the tape.
All right, here we go.
Thank you.
Violinist Christopher Anderson, all of 8 years old, and pianist Tiffany Wang in that Polish dance. Great performance. Just, again, all things considered, pretty remarkable.
Absolutely, yeah. Very, very gifted young man. Yeah.
We need to move along here because there's another question I need to ask you after our final performance. So tell us a little bit about... you said that there was a class about the Baruch piece.
Yeah, so we had a so originally there was a one of the classes for the music fest that was unfortunately canceled. Although I have to say that they after the music fest was canceled, they did try to revive and have like a master classes instead of the normal event. So you know, they were scrambling, we were all scrambling. So you know, we sort of did our thing as a again as a substitution, and yeah. So one of the classes was the Bruch Violin Concerto, third movement, which is a awesome piece, but very very challenging. There's a lot of quite nasty little technical bits that you have to master in order to sound good. So Jesse, we actually had a really interesting situation because we had two players that came in tied. It was Jesse and Stephen White. Stephen is about to go to college and he had midterms and some tests and stuff, and he could not make time to come to the studio and record, which was like, whew, okay. I mean, in some ways it was good because both of them would have to play the same piece, and then all of a sudden we would have to put it to the vote of the audience to see if we got it right as a judges by placing them tied. So, however, no, Jesse is this wonderful young violinist. We started working together a few years back. Actually, Tana Bland was our teacher before that, and she did an amazing job with Jesse. And Jesse is very mature for her age. She's tiny, so she's playing on a small violin.
Mm-hmm.
It's very, very difficult to actually make the smaller instruments work well. And she's doing a great job. And, seeing her progress as a young musician been very rewarding because she's an artist, but she also has that, logical part, which is necessary if you want to play the instrument well.
All right, let's give a listen. This is the conclusion of the Bruch Violin Concerto played by violinist Jesse Morozov, and she's joined by pianist Yichun Chen. Thank you. it's really amazing the sound that you can coax out of that little tiny violin. Yeah, that was Jesse Morozov playing the conclusion to the Bruch Violin Concerto with pianist Yichun Chen. Well, Mateusz Wolski, thank you for being here today, and thank you so much for putting together this violin celebration, which has brought us these great sounds and has allowed kids a chance to really exercise their musical chops.
Oh, absolutely. I just wanted to give a quick shout-out because we actually held that whole event at SFCC, who graciously allowed us to use this space for free, which was amazing because, you know, that's, I think that's a huge challenge if you don't get that. And also Spokane String Quartet, the Chamber Music Association, helped us to facilitate some of the registration fees and do that, you know, kind of by the books. So with those two organizations coming together to help just little violins in town and teachers was amazing. So
very good. Well, thanks to all. And again, thank you. And we hope next time we'll be talking about new things happening with the quartet and the symphony.
Oh, that would be awesome.